C1P. Number 15B.
So, we can see he speaks a very clear language. And the implication we can draw from it for us and for our attitude are quite heavy, quite big. She goes on to principle and considers that life eternal from the point of view of principle. Here the epitome runs like this. Through obedience to God, and you hear at once principle, obedience. Through obedience to God, we actually demonstrate principle, eternal life. So the epitome is quite clear. Here it is a question of demonstrating eternal life through obedience to principle, through obedience to God. She asks here really now, what is really the basis for demonstrating that there is no death? What is the basis? On what foundation can we fall back in order to demonstrate that? And so her answer is certainly not on material remedies, but spirit is our first and only resort. So she first goes back to life in and of spirit and says, life is always spiritual. It's life in and of spirit. That's our first resort. Then, she says, comes the trumpet word of truth. There is no death, no inaction, diseased action, overaction, nor reaction, because all these actions, these false actions, all lead to death. So first she really shows first life is spirit. That's the main overall tone. So in that life where we see that there is no death, no inaction, diseased action, overaction or reaction, where there is just that flow of life, the even flow of life, there life is in and of spirit. Now, how are you going to demonstrate that? So you come to the point of principle, and she says, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. What does it mean, if a man keep my saying? What is the saying? God says, I am mind, I am spirit, I am soul, I am principle, I am life, I am truth, I am love. That's the only word I speak. God doesn't talk about disease and about dying and life before death and life after death and life before birth and life after birth and so on. The only talk, that the only word that the word says is that God says, let there be mind, let there be spirit, let there be soul, let there be principle, let there be life. That's my word. Let there be truth, let there be love. If a man keeps that saying, if he really stick to those big categories, to the language of spirit, then she says, he shall never see death, because he is then only in the word of life. He flows along the whole creative word of life, the Logos. And through the Logos, all has been made what has been made. That nothing has been made that was not made by the Logos, by the word. And so if he keeps that saying, she says, he can prove that that word of life is true. He can demonstrate this fact and demonstrate, therefore, that life is real and that death is an illusion. So here we have the principle of life, of eternal life. If a man keep my saying, I said this rendering goes 8 times through that third block here. Always saying, go back to the word of life. If you go out from God, you can never see death. And then it comes to life as life, consecrating existence to life, man can master death. You have now a living sense of life, which says, if we would consecrate existence to the everlasting Father, life, in order to do that, we must offset all human misconceptions. Offset all human misconceptions. You remember, misconception is the counterfeit of life, everything that is misunderstanding, misinterpretation, misconception, mistreatment, misapplication. It's all the wrong method. And we must replace them with life, which is spiritual, not material. So, the great facts, the great spiritual facts must be brought out, which is what? That man is, as I said in italics, not shall be immortal. So here we have life as life, the great fact, which we only can have in life and spirit. Namely, that man is immortal, not that man shall be immortal. He is immortal. So we can truly see that all the questions which ask what will be after death is a false question already. We cannot win immortality through death or after death. We can only have immortality right here and now. Therefore, it demands that we have a completely different consciousness, which is consecrating right here and now everything to life. If we consecrate everything to life, we are in being. So man is immortal. We must hold forever the consciousness of existence. See, the consciousness of existence, right here and now. And material beliefs must be given up. Again, the laying down of the mortal, which life always demands. So that the immortal facts of being are admitted. So life as life says, admit the immortal facts of being. They are here and now. Lay down the belief that we have to gain life later on. Man is immortal. He does not need to become immortal. So he is already the facts of being. And then she goes one step further to truth, to a very interesting subject here. Through an understanding of life, again we have really here life and spirit, through an understanding of life, mortals awake from the dream. Can you hear truth? Truth is always that call, Adam, where art thou? Truth is always that which calls Adam and says, wake up. We must wake out of the dream into the true consciousness, out of the dreamy consciousness of mortal consciousness. Mortals awake from the dream of death. So death is a dream. It's a belief, as she has said. It isn't something. It isn't a fact. It isn't an entity. It isn't a happening. It is an illusion, a dream. Mrs. Eddy said, I have proven that. So she gives now a text where she tries to show what she has proven and what we as students should really prove. She said that she had healed hopeless diseases and raised the dying to life. And she said, how did I do it? She said, through the understanding of God as the only life. So she didn't raise up the dying by seeing that they were dying and were dead and therefore tried to call them back into the body or anything like that. She said, no. I did it really from the great fact of being that God is the only life. There is no other life but God. So the body has no life, the mortal man has no life. So God is the only life. That life must be brought to light by the understanding that there is no death, as well as by other graces of spirit. Then she said, that's what I have proven, and I told you how I proved it. What about my students? And she said, well, we must begin with the more simple demonstration. She said, don't start at the end. Start with the more simple demonstration of control. The final demonstration, she says, takes time for its accomplishment. Can you see, she's always somehow normal. She doesn't ask something that is way above the present state of a student's consciousness. She said, I have given you the absolute facts, and I have shown you that I work with this absolute fact, that God is the only life and that there is no other life, and I've proven it. But for the students, this may be asking too much at the beginning, and they have to take it step by step, and that may take time. So she knew that time is not an element of life. But she always was sensible. She had always common sense. Just as we had seen earlier that she doesn't ask the student because the only substance that exists in reality is spirit, that then the student says, all right, then I don't need to eat and to drink and to sleep. And in the same way, she says, you can't demonstrate from one day to the other the immortality of life. But she makes a further very interesting statement here. She says, mortal mind's affirmation is not true. What mortal mind says is not true. That dream is not true, really. Mortals waken from the dream of death. So now she calls that death a dream, and says they wake up from that dream of death, and they wake up first with bodies unseen by those who think that they bury the body. So can you see, at this point she really makes a transitional statement. First she had the absolute statement that man is immortal, and that she proved that man is immortal. On what basis? That God is the only life. Okay, but she said, take it easy. You may not be able to demonstrate that from one day to the other. You have to do it in steps. What is the next step for you to do? And here comes in truth. Namely, first to awake from a dream, from a mortal consciousness, from the dream that we can die, from the dream that we have died, and awake from the dream that we are awakened from death. This is really what goes on, and she says, and they will awake with bodies unseen by those who think they bury the body. And you know that especially today this is a subject that is foremost in people's mind. The bestsellers today are all about the science of death, as they call it, or with a Greek name, it's thanatology. Thanatology is the science of death. It comes from the Greek thanatos. Thanatos is death. So thanatology is the science of death. And today, so many bestsellers come out. You know, one or the other book, like Moody, Life After Life, or Kubler-Ross, also a bestseller, who was writing about on death and dying, and both and many others who are now investigating the phenomena of death, they all bring out what Mrs. Eddy said here. They all bring out that those who have passed on and came back, so who have passed on, perhaps were away for, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, were considered to be death, that they all somehow recount the same phenomena, not very different from each other, and they all say, well, we woke up with a body, and we could see ourselves lying in the bed dead, and all the people around the bed just mourning about that death, but they could not communicate with those people standing around that bed with the dead body of themselves in it, and they couldn't communicate, but still they had bodies that were similar and unseen to mortals, and with bodies with which they could fly through the walls and could really go anywhere, but unseen to those who were left behind. And then naturally they tell how they wanted to go back, though they may not have wanted to go back, but they felt their duties were to go back, and how difficult it was really and to go back, because on the other side it's much nicer than on this side. So they woke up, or they do wake up, with bodies unseen, meaning really that as the tree falleth, so it lieth. As we fall asleep with a kind of a consciousness, we fall asleep, with that consciousness we wake up, so that actually death doesn't do a great trick, though actually these reports that they gathered were actually saying, no, it was quite a bit nicer on the other side than on this side, so that most didn't like to come back. But still, they had their material identity, though that material form was no more so material that as on this side, but still with a material form, which all is actually hinting us to the great point that we actually can solve that dream of death right here, without actually going through that experience called death. We can go through these little deaths, actually. And every time I would say that we begin to see something more about the spiritual reality of our life, which is absolutely independent on matter, as she said in the second subject, absolutely independent on matter, and we begin to sense something and become conscious just a little bit that man is not material, that we live and move and have our being in a spiritual realm, independent on a body. We undergo a little death and rise higher in the scale of being. And I think everyone that has devoted his consciousness to that very point has had many experiences which have given to them the absolute certainty that life is actually immortal. That life is a life and has an individuality of life, that we have an individuality of life, not a misty sense of life, a sense of life where life is just one big term, just a mysterious term, life, but where we actually begin to feel, my word, I now touch a little bit about that life which has no beginning, no end, a life that is a sense of isness, absolutely independent on the body, absolutely independent on the body. And that's a little death. I die daily. And it's... But we don't die daily. We don't have these experiences which come in the quietude of our consciousness, which come in the quietude of our praying, where it comes in the quietude perhaps of the inner struggle for spirituality and seeing really the calculus of the spirit clear, and therefore divesting ourselves of all material conception. That doesn't come as long as we cling to a sense that we live in the body. Already now, we really have to see that point of life as life here, that life is always independent on a mortal body. And these experiences are some of the most impressive experiences that never leave one again. They linger on afterwards, they stay on afterwards as a background hum, not music, it's not so strong as a music, but as a background hum that gives us a terrific assurance that this kind of concept that we have been born into matter and live in matter and have to get out of matter, that that is just one of the many silly dreams. It's a dream of the insane and has nothing to do with being itself. And it stays with you quite clearly so that you feel, I am being that is being. I'm the beingness of being. And I never live in that dream called mortal existence. And if we do that, somehow, little by little, we die daily. Which brings us right away to the last subject of love, namely, the all-inclusive life. The all-inclusive life has no beginning and no end. Yes, her side note is continuity of existence. And we have to see that clearly. It is actually not so much a continuity of existence. It's actually the beingness of existence. Because continuity still has a sense of time, of a development, of going on and on and on and on, which gives a time sense. She says, but life has no beginning and no end. And again, that seems to be not quite what she wants to bring out. Because if we think about life has no beginning, we just think back to a beginning that is even further past. And if it has no end, we still think in a life that goes even longer than the end. And we still have a terrific long sense of life. That's not life. Life is, isn't it? It is like this. I always go back to mathematics and say, when did 2 and 2 equal 4 came into being? When was the beginning of 2 and 2 equal 4? When is the end of 2 and 2 equal 4? No beginning, no end. It is a fact that existed not since time immemorial, a fact that is in being. Humanly seen, it seems that at one point in time somebody began to realize it, that 2 and 2 are 4. The dinosaurs didn't know that. Only when man began to reason, he said, 2 and 2 is 4. But 2 and 2, 4 has always been a fact in being. It's always factual. So, she says, if man did not exist before the material organization began, he could not exist after the body is disintegrated. So she first wants to bring out that man has existed since ever and will exist ever afterwards. If we live after death and are immortal, we must have lived before death. And so one begins to reason out, now where have I been before death? Where did I live before death? Where did I live before birth? Where did I live? If I lived before birth, where was it? Was it in the year 1700? Was it in the year 200? Was it in the time BC? Was it somewhere in Tibet? Or was it in Timbuktu? Or was it in the as an Indian? Or where did I live before birth, if I lived before birth? And still that does not quite answer the question here. You see, we just extend life in a long time instead of bringing into the isness of things. Therefore, she says, if a man keep my saying, again she says that, he shall never see death. That's the answer. If I keep the word now, then the question of birth and death does not arise. And then I get nearer to the facts of being. When I leave that question, which are all questions of limitations, of a beginning and an end, that's a question of limitation. And if I leave that right out and don't ask these wrong questions of time, especially now that the world says there is no such a thing as time, there is no such a thing as space. These are all mortal concepts. They don't exist, really. Not even the physicist believes anymore in time and space. So why should we believe in time and space if life is in and of spirit? Then we should never anymore ask that question, what was before birth, what is after death? When a man gives up his belief in death, he will then actually advance rapidly towards God, life. So this is really the point that we begin to see. We actually should give up that whole question of birth and death. If we give up that question and are seeing that man is in science, and in every science facts are timeless and spaceless. Every fact is timeless and spaceless. There is no birth for 2 and 2, 4. There is no death for 2 and 2, 4. These facts are in another realm. They don't live in the three-dimensional material realm of space and time. We live in the spiritual calculus of being, where the line, plane, space and fourth dimension are all spiritual. And there we live and move and have our being. And therefore we have to rise to that consciousness. So can you see how she develops that whole sense in a beautiful way about life? I just run quickly through it, how she presents that life is that which is the eternality of man's life. Saying at the point of mind, the very first thing we have to do is to give up the concept of death. Give it up, relinquish it. As the point of spirit, she would say, see that life is not contingent on matter, is not contingent on the three-dimensional limited space-time continuum. Therefore, at the point of soul, see that nothing can interfere with that life that is. No birth, no death can interfere with it. It is absolutely untouched by any question of birth and death. Therefore, if you stick and stay obedient to the word of life, if a man keep my saying, if I stick to the word of life, I cannot see death. The question of death cannot come up, because life, from the synonymous term life, cannot ask what is death, cannot ask what is before death, cannot ask what is after death. From the point of view of life, he cannot see death. The question does not arrive. So that we can see all what has to be done is that we wake up from a mortal dream of existence. That we are dreaming along in an insane world, thinking there is such a thing as birth and death, and we better wake up from out of it and awake from it and rise into a completely different consciousness, where I see that life is without beginning, without end, without birth, without death, where the question is obsolete. Then I have touched life, being. Isn't that beautiful how she presents that? How she answers here practically any question about life and death and birth.